Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, Coug fans. It's Sunday in the Seattle area in Washington State. Neil Roberts and Victor Vargas coming to you live on Blog Talk Radio. I'm at an undisclosed location on the west side. Victor's over by the Tri-Cities Washington State University campus. Victor, how are you today?
I'm good. I'm also in an undisclosed location. You don't know where I'm at.
Yeah. They have no idea, even though I just told them. Alrighty. So for Coug fans, it's been an exciting couple of days here. Well, actually, it's been an exciting 6 weeks, as the Cougs are now 5-1 in their last 6 games. They've overcome a mind-numbing loss to Portland State at the start of the season. They're now 7-3 and currently sitting at number 23 in the country in the coaches' poll, number 24 in the AP poll for the first time since October and 6. Victor, what was your immediate reaction to seeing the AP and coaches' poll this morning?
I was very happy. I mean, this is us Cougs, you know, we haven't been good for a long time. So it's nice that we're finally getting the respect, at least on a national level. Now people are finally starting to take notice. And I think we can safely say that, you know, we earned this respect. This isn't anything that's been given to us. I mean, following, you know, the close loss to Stanford and then last night's game, and among the rest of the games as well, we definitely earned those ratings.
Oh, yeah, no. It's just this team is something else, I guess you should say, as the Cougars are currently, you know, they bounced back from that loss. They bounced back from what it looked like losing Luke Falk in that game early to a potential concussion when he was body slammed in the second half. They got that touchdown off of Peyton Bender, who does not get enough credit for, you know, playing it conservatively-ish when he first came in, when he didn't know how long he was going to be in there, a couple of short throws, which is the exact opposite of what we saw against Portland State when he came out and threw it right into the lap of a safety well beyond the receiver on the route. And then he dropped that beautiful dime of a pass into Dom Williams' lap there. And I just, you know, me and I were texting during the game and joking about Bender from Futurama.
Yes.
Because that's what happens. When, you know,
because we're mature
and
like that.
Just that awesome. But something that... Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I mean, Bender, he did come through when he had to. I mean, he did seem jittery at first when he first got on the field. But, I mean, like you said, completing that touchdown pass was crucial, to say the least.
Yeah, I don't think you can really ever underestimate what he was able to do in that game, not turn the ball over, get the Cougars into a position to win. That's just something that is really impressive for someone of that age and that skill set, in my mind. Now, Luke did end up coming back. There were times when he still looked like he was concussed. But lo and behold, you know, he held up, went out there, and he was able to lead a game-winning drive with just about a minute left in the ball game.
Yeah, I'm very surprised because, I mean, he was struggling to get up when he first got hit early, you know, the first time he got sacked. So, but it was a very impressive performance. I mean, Luke Falk, he's a tough guy. I mean, certainly saw it on his jerseys. I mean, the grass stains and the dirt and the rough tactics, to say the least, that the Bruins defense used. I mean, there was at least one instance of targeting that I saw, but apparently the refs didn't.
Yeah, it just, UCLA was clearly on a headhunting mission in this game as the Bruins were hitting receivers out of bounds, throwing players to the ground well after the whistle had ended. There was really no apparent respect for the safety of the players involved by the officials in this ball game, and it was something that was quite concerning for me. But, you know, Washington State managed to overcome that. UCLA did not, although it looked like UCLA did there for a moment. What was your reaction to that Josh Rosen 37-yard touchdown run on the read option?
I mean, it was a good performance by Grosson. It's just with a minute, at this point, with a minute left, I'm not as worried as I've been in the past, because if anything, if there's one thing that this team does well consistently, is they can come back with Falk on the field, because he's very good at those sort of comeback wins. I mean, as long as he has some time, you know, a minute, you know, that's plenty of time for him. And he showed that by getting the giving it to Marks for the touchdown.
And that was one, you know, an extremely athletic play for Gabe Marks on that touchdown run. He got beat. There was some pushing and shoving on both sides, but the defender got his hands underneath the Marks' shoulder pad and pushed him all off, because Marks went for the football, and Marks still managed to corral it and pull it in. And that was quite an athletic feat. It shows that he's probably not going to be here next year, and that he's probably going to be playing in the NFL come next Sunday, to the 2016 season. But the future of this receiver core looks like it's in great shape, because you saw Kyle Sweet step up and fill in admirably for River Craycraft in that game. River, you know, is out, you know, he was out, but he wasn't injured, if you were to ask Mike Leach. He's just happy and he's just healthy. But Craycraft was hurt against Arizona State, if we're going to be honest here. And as a result, River, you know, Sweet had to step up. Sweet did a great job. You know, you also got to see Kerryon Priester get a couple of screen passes. Martin looked smart, pretty quick at times as a true freshman. He's earned his playing time, and it's clear this receiving core is stacked, and UCLA didn't really have answers for it other than, you know, some late hits.
Yeah, their tactics. That's always been something of concern, at least that I've been concerned with, is, I mean, how much are they going to rely on Craycraft? But, I mean, especially with this game, they proved that they don't necessarily – I mean, it's always nice to have Craycraft on the field, obviously, but they don't necessarily desperately need to have him to win ball games.
No, they don't. And that's – I mean, I love River. Don't get me wrong. He's a fantastic receiver, and he's been a great dude. But
– oh, definitely.
It's good to see that it's not – they don't need Dom and Marks and Craycraft to be carrying the load at the wideout position.
Yeah,
you know, and that's obviously one of Mike Leach's strengths. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just saying they can be a threat. Any of those receivers is you have to watch out for if you're on the defense.
And, you know, they've done some great things. You know, speaking about that defense, yeah, they gave up the 37-yard run, but they didn't really let Josh Rosen get comfortable in the pocket, as they were able to bolt that defensive front seven that Coach Joe coaches is in charge of, was able to bully the Bruins offensive line all night, force Josh Rosen out of the pocket. And that's just great work on his part here, especially since Rosen is arguably the best true freshman quarterback in the country. And just to see them stand strong and go, no, you're not going to have the time. You're not going to be able to pick apart our secondary. And to see how tight the secondary was playing the receivers throughout most of the night, true freshman Darian Moulton was impressive. Again, I had to really like what we were seeing out of number 18. I'm totally forgetting how to pronounce his name at this point. I'm not even going to put even attempt. Well, actually, I am. It's, but I just got to remember the – give me a moment on that. Victor, can you cover me here for a second?
As you said, Josh Rosen, I was impressed with him. I mean, you know, he's on the other team. But even when, you know, the Cook defense did a good job putting pressure on him, but even at times, it seemed to me that Josh was able to still, at times, again, not every time, he was able to make adjustments and get the ball out and, you know, not have any extremely scary moments, like just for him as a quarterback, but the Cougs even still did a good job of forcing him into that position of where he had to either throw the ball away or, he had to throw the ball away.
Yeah. So the Cougs, you know, and the defense played well down the stretch. They, you know, the 37-yard touchdown run came as a result of shutting down the running lanes and the passing lanes, and it was just a great decision by Rosen to pull the ball in and scramble on the read option. So it just it was an interesting game. It was, I'm really glad Washington State came out on top. Proved me wrong when I said it felt a lot like the 2011 game down in the Rose Bowl. Now, that wasn't the only crazy upset in college football. We'll talk a little bit about the other crazy upset at the end of this broadcast. And it wasn't the only crazy upset of the night, as Ronda Rousey finally lost it in the UCF. And Victor, I just need your immediate reaction to that, because mine was disbelief.
I mean, I'm not going to claim to be, like, a big MMA fan. I mean, I'm boxing is more expertise, but, I mean, I didn't see that coming either. I mean, part of that is I just didn't know who Holly Holm is or was. But, I mean, when I watched the fight, I mean, obviously I watched it since I was watching the football game. I watched the Rousey fight sort of after, like, this morning. I mean, in the first round, though, you could see that Holmes just came out with the perfect game plan against Rousey. She just slowed the pace of the fight down enough so that Rousey would have to get a little desperate, and then that's what she ended up being, just desperate to get in on the inside and try to put Holmes on the ground. But Holmes just wasn't having it. She kept countering Rousey and kept hitting her with the straight left hand. I mean, by the end of the first round, Rousey already looked beaten. Like, she had a bloody nose and just was really sloppy with their attacks. And just, I'd never seen Rousey like that ever. So I was like, oh, my gosh.
Because yeah, Rousey, I mean, like, you know, you're talking about Josh. Earlier, you were talking about Josh Rosen's ability to adapt. Rousey didn't seem to adapt as the fight went on. She seemed to struggle more and more and seemed to try to get back from what she was more capable of instead of changing around and forcing, you know, Holly to adapt her game plan. My girlfriend would like to weigh in that Holly's boxing experience probably helped her out with this fight and helped allow her to have a better idea of how to handle a slower pace, and that's one of the big reasons she was able to upset Rousey. What's your thought of that?
I agree. Yeah, and it's also her boxing and kickboxing ability, because she would throw punches and sort of hide the kicks that were coming. And that's what she pretty much ended up doing in the second round. I mean, she hit Rousey with the left hand. It didn't land cleanly, but it still landed. And Rousey, she got off balance. And then when she got up, she didn't see that kick. I mean, I can guarantee you that.
Yeah, it just, you know, and as my girlfriend put it, Victoria put it, she saw Rousey had a couple hits and probably was seeing stars, you know, and that's just something that it's really hard for a fighter to overcome when you've been hit hard like that on your heels going, hey, what the hell? And I can't even imagine, especially when, you know, you're that big name, there's a lot of pressure on you to carry on and continue to win out, and Rousey just wasn't able to do it.
I mean, yeah, you did touch on something. I mean, Holmes pretty much had nothing to lose. I mean, nobody was really giving her much of a chance, at least none of the people that I talked to. So, I mean, she fought like exactly like that. She came out with pretty much the anti-Rousey game plan of, like, how to beat her. You don't get into a wrestling match with her or get on the ground with her. You stay, you know, standing. And I mean, she displayed her superior boxing abilities, and also she just does have, she's a human being after all. I mean, she has holes in her game, and that hole cost her.
Yeah. And you have to give a lot of credit to Halls and her coaching and her team and her coaching and all that for being able to pick out those holes and create a game plan that executed it.
I mean, perfectly too. I mean, it was from the opening round. I mean, Rousey didn't really have an answer for this.
And that's what cost her the match ultimately and the belt.
Mm-hmm.
So any final thoughts on that Rousey fight before we move on?
I would say I'm kind of excited to see a rematch. I mean, my gut feeling tells me that Holmes might have Rousey's number, but I am curious to see, I mean, how does Ronda respond to, you know, what Holmes just did to her? I mean, obviously she wants to recover. I mean, I heard that she had to go to the hospital after the fight, so, I mean, obviously that's perfectly one, but down the road, it'd be interesting to see a rematch.
Yeah, and from my perspective, this is exactly what the women's UCF needed and the women's fighters needed to catch the country's attention, is this kind of grudge match. We saw how with the WWE World Wrestling Entertainment, but back way back when in the 70s when it was first forming, how the it was, you know, these grudge matches, these revenge fights, even though the WWE is entirely scripted for the most part, these revenge matches, these grudge fights, we need to see these guys are going to fight multiple times because the first fight went the wrong way. These upsets of the big names that everybody knows generally is the best for the sport in terms of, hey, this is why this sport's exciting, and this is why people will watch it. There's going to be more people who watch this rematch than who watch the initial fight. And there's going to be more people who get exposed to this sport as a result of this fight, the rematch, and any other rematches that may or may not happen after the fact. So I think this is exactly what was needed for women's UCF.
I mean, yeah, I completely agree with you. I mean, this is what boxing needs. I mean, God help that sport.
Yeah, it's a very true statement. So, Victor, we're now going to move on to the Seahawks here. There's no smooth transition I can pull from this one. The Seahawks are kind of on their hind legs. They're back into the corner at 4-4. The Arizona Cardinals, first place in the NFC West, coming in. And even if they lose tonight on Sunday Night Football, they're still going to be in first place because of the lead they've got. What are you looking for today, Victor, to this game for the Seahawks to pull it out?
They need to, I mean, the offense just needs to get on track. I mean, I haven't really been that impressed with the offense as of late. Especially this season. Oh my gosh, sorry, I'm getting texts everywhere. I mean, the Cowboys win, I mean, didn't impress me really at all. I mean, they edged out 13-12 win, even with Tony Romo gone, who, again, I mean, Romo's not the best quarterback anyway, but it's up to the Seahawks offense, in my opinion.
Yeah, I completely agree on that point. I'm going to add a little bit more on the offense. The offensive line is lost and like a total wreck at multiple points this season. And it's been a major reason why the Seahawks are sitting at 4-4 is the offense can't stay on the field and the defense gets left out there exposed. You know, the offense needs with the air raid, when you're looking at it, it's not about chewing time off the clock. It's about putting up as much points on the board. The Seahawks offense is a ball control type of offense. And they need to grind it out. They need to run the ball. They need to force, you know, the other team to throw the ball. Now, Arizona is extremely, extremely, extremely good at passing the ball. Carson Palmer is experiencing a little bit of a career renaissance with the air down in the desert. He's just been absolutely on fire this season. Once my internet loads, then go ahead and pull up the stats. There's just nothing that, you know, you can really look at and go, yeah, he's struggling. Palmer has the fifth most total yards in the NFL right now at 2,386. Now, total yards aren't that great a statistic for many reasons. So looking at it, he's having an insane completion. His completion percentage right now is sitting at 65%. 60, right around 65% at 64.6. He's hitting his passes. He's hitting his wideouts. He's not turning the ball over a whole lot. Six picks and three fumbles with 20 touchdowns. It's just they haven't been – defenses haven't been able to get Carson Palmer out of his comfort zone, and that's something the Seahawks are going to need to do on defense, and it's going to be down to the offense to also help out with that, getting back to the offensive point, because they need to hold onto the ball and get Carson to pass it. Now, as we saw, yes, last night with Washington State, that doesn't necessarily mean anything because the Cougars, you know, they chewed 3 minutes off the clock on that drive or fall through the pick, and UCLA immediately went down in less than a minute to score, but and then WSU went down in over a minute to score. So it's just ball can time, the time of possession, though, is still going to be important, especially at the NFL level. Even
though, definitely.
You know, the Cardinals like to pass a lot.
Yeah, and I don't know, what do you think that, like, I mean, Michael Bennett, he's having a pretty good year. I mean, 6.5 sacks, and then Chris Sherman still doing his thing. I mean, do you think, I mean, in a matchup between Carson Palmer and his quarterback against Bennett, do you think Bennett will be able to get through the O-line and put
pressure
on?
Yeah, I don't – yeah, no, that's a pretty good question. I don't think that Bennett's going to have an issue getting to Palmer, getting into the backfield. The question is going to be, is he going to get to Palmer fast enough? Because the Cardinals do stretch the field a lot, but it's after they've pulled you in with screens and slants and short route, high percentage passes that genuinely lead to 7, 8, 9, 10-yard gains, you know, first downs every couple of plays. And that's just what the Seahawks haven't been very good at this season, is limiting those short yardage situations.
Right. And I'm also worried,
so
I mean,
just,
going back to the offensive point, Lynch's leg injuries, I mean, against Dallas, you know, he didn't look like the beast, you know. So, I mean, that's something else to watch out for, in my opinion, because they got to get the running game going.
Yeah, they need to get the run game going. Thomas Rawls has been a pleasant find for the Hawks, and he's been a nice change of pace back, but he's only going to get you so far. The Seahawks need to get Marshawn going, and I know he's been struggling with injuries, and I know he's at the 29 carry. He's 29 years old. He's over 300 carries for his career, and he's had all these plateaus that leave you knowing that the decline, this very well could be his decline. He's only averaging 3.6 yards a carry. He hasn't had that explosive run like we've seen in the past. His long is just 24, whereas Rawls, who we discussed earlier, his long 69 yards. He's averaging 5.4 yards a carry. On 69 carries, Thomas Rawls has 376 total rushing yards. On 100, Marshawn Lynch is 375. That shows you how bad Marshawn has been in this game. Now, a lot of that does have to do with the offensive line being hot garbage.
To put it mildly.
Yeah, I mean, they're close to dumpster fire level. And that's saying something, because Seahawks fans have seen some bad offensive lines, especially when Mike Holmgren last year and Jim Mora's only year as the head coach in Seattle. It's just Seahawks have seen some fans have seen bad offensive lines in the past, and it's just it's not good. I can say right now. So this
is probably
the worst offensive line we've seen in a long time.
And what's scary is like the O line has never been, you know, amazing. Even when, you know, if you go back to the Super Bowl years, even then they weren't. You weren't anything, you know, write home about or at all.
No, they weren't. They were, but they played well. They played together as a unit, and they were able to open up holes for Marshawn. Now, you lose Max Unger in the Jimmy Graham trade, and Graham, they're slowly utilizing Graham. They're slowly bringing him back into the offense. But he's just, he's got more targets than anyone else on the field. He's been targeted 54 times and pulled it in 38. But it's just, you know, they've gotten Graham in a lot more often now, but it's pretty clear that they really do miss Max at the center position. And that trade, which still boggles my mind a little bit, is looking, you know, a little more unfortunate for the Seahawks. Now, granted, Max is injured right now down in New Orleans, so it's not like the Saints have had any great luck with it as well, but it's still just, you just got to look at it and go, how much better could this line be if Max Unger was still with the Seahawks, you know?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that statement kind of says it all about the O-line. How would it be if Max Unger was back?
Yeah, but then again, how bad would this receiving core be if they didn't have Jimmy Graham with pulling in, you know, 11.8 yards per catch? You know, he's done a good job of stretching the field and opening the field up for the Seahawks, especially now that him and Russell have gotten a little more comfortable with each other.
I guess those are like those tough decisions that the Seahawks offense, has to make.
Yeah, and the Seahawks need to invest some serious money in the offensive line or draft picks coming up here, because it's pretty clear that the experiment of converting defensive ends and defensive tackles to left guards and left tackles is been quite the disaster. All right, Victor. So we've got a few minutes left here in this podcast. We're going to do a quick whip around of all the sports stories, starting off with the... Well, I'm sorry there. The Seahawks are going to have to... I apologize. I accidentally muted my phone with my cheek. The Seahawks are going to have to do some major renovations on their offensive line, whether that comes investing some cash into it or some draft picks. Now, we're going to do a quick rip around of stories and getting 1 to 2 sentence reactions from the host, me and Vic, Neil and Victor. Victor, what do you think about the Oregon Ducks keeping their Pac-12 North title hopes alive and ending the Stanford Cardinals' hopes for a Pac-12 playoff bid last night at the Fawn?
It was an impressive comeback win, but I think the Ducks definitely missed Mariota. I don't expect the Ducks to continue. I hope this is a shift in dominance in the Pac-12.
Yeah, I would say the same thing. The Stanford Cardinal didn't look ready at all for the Ducks' defense to actually, you know, cover receivers. I don't think anyone expected the Ducks' defense to actually be able to cover receivers, but they were able to do it, and they shut down Stanford's passing attack for the majority of the game, put a lot more pressure on Christian McCarthy, and he wasn't able to. Next, the Pac-12 is shut out of the playoffs. More than likely, we'll find out for sure on Tuesday, as Utah got knocked off by Arizona, and both, Victor, your reaction.
I didn't see that one coming. Neither school in Arizona has really impressed me, but, you know, they proved me wrong. I mean, I don't know what much more to say beyond that. I definitely didn't expect that.
Yeah, it was a surprise. Arizona looked like they were broken after losing to WSU. They got whooped by UW 49-3, but not least, and something we haven't talked about on the website before or really with each other, the Kansas City Royals are your World Series champions. What do you have to say about that?
I'm glad they got it because the Mets beat my Dodgers, so I was looking for revenge in some capacity. And
you're
I guess
just looking
great
for some kind
of... for them to get their second series title.
All right. Me? The Kansas City Royals have driven me nuts. Ned Yost, he's not the best tactical mind, but he's got a World Series ring, and that says a lot about baseball. Thank you guys for listening, and have a great weekend. Go Hawks! So that was the best moment for the Seahawks. All right, there you go. All right, Victor, thanks for doing this, man. What do you think of Blog Talk Radio?
That's confusing.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll give it another shot. We'll do live. Let's try doing these live.
And then
once
if it's not
on Sundays. Go ahead.
Okay.
No, what do you say? What were you gonna say?
Oh, I was gonna say we could do it, but then if we don't like it, I mean it's Sunday. I don't know what else. I don't know what you're doing, but I'm free to try the Skype thing or the Google chat thing again.
Okay, so how about what we do is we do a like a Wednesday afternoon, a Wednesday night podcast on Blog Talk Radio, and then we keep trying the Skype thing for Sundays.
That
sound like a plan?
Yeah.
Because we do need to do more podcasts. We need to become a little more regular, and I need to start writing again.
Yeah, me too.
You were writing more than I was for a while.
I mean, once a week, I mean, considering the free time I have, that's just, yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, and if you want, I can get you the login information so you can set to do boxing podcast. You know, you're getting 7-8 views when you post articles now, so.
Hello.
Without, like, me sharing it or anything like that, so you're starting to build a following.
Hell yeah.
Man. The Eagles are such a dumpster fire this year.
Philly?
Yeah.
That
I wonder
like,
what's going on with the zebra.
Dude, I wish they should grab one of those zebras to be like their new mascot, even though it doesn't make any sense.
Be the Philadelphia Zebras.
Yeah.
That'd be pretty funny. I'm not going to lie. Not going to lie.
The color green and white or whatever that fucking shade of green is. Keep that shade of.
So. Yeah. All right. Time to eat. I don't know, dude. That was fun. Yeah, the Blog Talk Radio. It's got potential, but they're not there yet. So. Yeah. What did you do this weekend? Anything exciting?
I've been like writing just random fucking screenplays. Like a hipster.
No, you haven't.
I just like yeah.
Yeah, that's great though.
I mean, yeah, it keeps me busy. I'm just like, I don't plan on really doing anything with it. I'm just like, oh fuck it, this would be funny if this happened. And then,
you don't know unless you keep trying.
Yeah, no, definitely. I'm just like.
You know, we could probably Skype now and.
Too much Halo. So I'm trying to get away from Halo a little bit because I like got obsessed with beating the campaigns on Legendary. Oh, there we go.